Chapter 3. Lay. The plane touched the tarmac of Beijing Capital International Airport, the city's older but well-utilized hub close to the city center. A black limousine pulled up alongside as the pilot maneuvered the aircraft clear of the busy terminals and guided it toward a reserved area away from the main gates. Jack disembarked and headed towards the limousine, whose back door opened, revealing a fatigued ambassador inside. She mustered a strained smile. "Jack," she said, reaching out a hand, "I wish we met under better circumstances." Jack clasped Laura's hand firmly and stepped into the limousine.
"So do I, Laura," he responded, settling into the leather seat. "Losing Nick, it's hard."
Laura nodded. "Nick was one hell of a DCM. He lived for this work. He will leave a void that won't be easy to fill." Laura fell silent and gazed out the window as the limousine departed from the runway. Jack had known Nick as a friend, but for Laura, he had been her closest ally in the diplomatic arena, a loyal deputy, someone she trusted with confidential information. It was likely that Laura had asked him for crucial advice just yesterday. Jack could see the toll of the loss reflected in Laura's weary eyes.
"Laura," Jack asked, breaking the silence, "what happened?"
"We really don't know, Jack. What's in the report is what we got so far. Nick's death was a shock, and the way he died, I'd be lying if I didn't admit it has me worried."
Jack nodded, the gravity of the situation sinking in. "Worried that you could be next?"
"That as well," Laura admitted. "I've been around enough to know I shouldn't underestimate any threats, but it's not about me. Whoever did this knew Nick well enough to be able to enter his apartment and kill him without him putting up a fight. Plus, the killer apparently knew something about Nick that, in his eyes, justified his death."
Laura fell silent again. The limousine left the airport to take the busy highway leading to the city center.
Jack noticed several new high-rise apartment complexes towering along the road, their glass facades shining in the sun, and the roads filled with a sea of electric vehicles, both a testament to China's rapid development. Despite these changes, he felt an unexpected sense of homecoming. Perhaps it was Beijing's skyline that loomed before him, or the familiar zigzagging of cars weaving in and out of lanes, a ballet he once performed himself when driving on these streets. As they crawled along the congested traffic, it was hard for Jack to ignore the normalcy of life carrying on, indifferent to the turbulence Nick's death had triggered.
"The city seems untouched by it all."
"Isn't that always the case? The world moves on, Jack, regardless of our personal turmoils," Laura replied, staring out the window. She leaned forward to take a sip of water. "There have been some new developments while you were in the air. We're headed straight to the Forensic Institute. We've been informed that they are close to releasing the autopsy result. I want you there."
"I thought we have our own examiner there to report to us."
"We do, yes, Dr. Seeger. But he is only an observer, and to be frank, I don't really know him. There is still the possibility of something larger going on, and we need to find out if they are purposefully hiding anything from us. I have no doubt that Dr. Seeger is a capable pathologist, but I also have no doubt that his attention could be steered in the wrong direction if the Chinese wanted to misguide him during the examination. You're good with people, Jack. You'll notice if anything seems off."
Laura took off her glasses and rubbed her eyes before she continued.
"There is something else."
"Yes?"
"Beijing police has agreed to grant you access to their investigation. It seems they have a vested interest in preventing this situation from escalating."
Jack looked at the ambassador, raising an eyebrow at this unexpected news. "Just like that, they're letting me in? You said they might be hiding something."
Laura nodded. "They might. Letting you in could just be a smokescreen to direct us away from the real reasons behind Nick's murder. Or perhaps they are genuine. We can't say for sure. This is all unprecedented. But remember, your role will be discreet. You're here unofficially."
"How is this supposed to work, then? Am I expected to play the role of some covert private eye without any real enforcement power?" Jack questioned.
"No. When I say they're letting you in, I mean they're really letting you in. You'll be working together with Officer Zheng Lei from the Beijing Police Force. You'll be his unofficial assistant, so to speak.
He is still in his early 30s, but already the equivalent to a deputy inspector, some kind of wunderkind, it seems. Jack gave Laura a skeptical look. Sounds like I'll be on a leash held by a puppy. Jack, Laura replied, her tone now more serious, our capacity to help is limited. We're on Chinese soil. Our reach is minimal. We've got no jurisdiction here. And the last thing we need right now is to ruffle feathers and escalate the situation into an international incident. Antagonizing the Chinese isn't an option. Look, Nick was a terrific deputy, the finest I've ever had the privilege to work with. But he had a knack for getting himself tangled up in trouble. You're no stranger to that. Hell, half of the time I learned about the trouble Nick's gotten himself into from your reports. After you left, he did not have the kind of connection he had with you with anybody else at the embassy. Nobody is better suited than you to figure out what is going on here and find Nick's killer. Just keep a low profile, play along, and figure out what happened. Jack considered the delicate nature of his assignment. He contemplated sharing his findings about Nick's unusual trips to Xinjiang, but he decided against it. At this point, it was just an anomaly he noticed on a spreadsheet. It might turn out to be significant, or it could be a red herring. Revealing it now would only add unnecessary speculation to an already tense situation. We're here. Laura gestured out the window as the limousine crossed the Shihucheng River and entered a small side street. A plain, unassuming stone and glass structure appeared in front of them. Jack took a moment to examine the building. It looked sterile, cold even, a bureaucrat's dream. The limousine came to a halt in front of the main entrance. I'll be leaving you here. Remember to keep me in the loop if there is any critical development. Laura searched the inner pockets of her jacket. And Jack, take this. I suppose you still know how to operate one of those? Indeed. Jack nodded, accepting the encrypted smartphone that assured secure contact with the embassy. He opened the door and stepped onto the sidewalk as the car door shut behind him with a soft thud. The limousine pulled away, leaving him alone in front of the Institute of Forensic Science. He entered the building and saw a group of uniformed officers standing in the middle of the opulent lobby. A young man looked up and detached himself from the group. Jack examined the man closely as he walked towards him. His round face and black hair and a short buzz cut gave him a boyish look, yet his stride had the confidence of a commanding officer, and his rank insignia denoted him as senior member of the Beijing police force. His eyes were keen, observant, and focused on Jack. Assuming that this man must be Zheng Lei, Jack extended a greeting in Mandarin and performed a customary short bow. The man looked back at him, his eyes hinting at a mild surprise before a warm smile broke through his stern facade. I appreciate your greetings, Mr. Decker. I am Officer Zheng. I was told you are quite fluent in Mandarin. However, I suggest we keep it simple and converse in English. It helps me to shake off some rust, and I am sure your excellent Mandarin will soon be required during our investigation anyway. He replied in accent-free English. That is appreciated. Officer Zheng, if I might say, your English is impeccable. How did you manage that? Jack wondered. Thank you. After my years at the College for Criminal Law Science in Beijing, I continued my studies of international relations at Yale. Years of total immersion in another culture can work wonders if one is up for it. To keep it fresh, I make a habit of binge-watching American series. They tend to be quite the teacher. Lei chuckled lightly. Taken by surprise by Lei's unexpected candor and easygoing demeanor, Jack responded with an acknowledging nod. Lei continued with a determined look. Am I correct to understand that you have been close to the victim? Nick was my friend. I am sorry for your loss, Mr. Decker. I hope we can collaborate to solve this appalling crime, he asserted sincerely. It's a shock to us all and an abomination that such a tragedy happened here in my hometown. I want to apologize on behalf of my people. I want you to know that we will do everything possible to find the culprit and ensure justice is served. Thank you, Jack nodded appreciatively. It's a terrible loss. I'm here to aid the investigation in whatever capacity I can. So I was informed. Your support will be valuable in our pursuit of the truth. However, please be aware that the direction of this investigation is in my hands. And there it was, the clear line drawn in the sand of who was in charge. Lei's tact impressed Jack. He was personable and friendly, yet he didn't hesitate to make the hierarchy clear from the beginning. It was evident to Jack how the officer ascended to his position at such a young age. Fair enough, Jack thought. He was prepared to navigate this delicate dance, respecting Lay's authority while working to get to the bottom of the case. "I'm sure we'll get along," Jack replied. Lay reacted with a smile.
"I suggest we see what Dr. Lee and Dr. Seeger have to tell us. I have heard that they have finished their examination."
"Lead the way."
They advanced towards a small, guarded door to the side of the lobby. As they approached, the guard, a grim-looking officer, recognized Lay and stepped aside. They walked through a series of corridors. The narrow hallways, marked by beige walls and fluorescent lighting, offered a stark contrast to the grandeur of the entrance lobby and seemed to wind endlessly into the heart of the building. Eventually, they arrived at the central morgue of the Forensic Institute, a long, white-tiled room whose one side was taken up by the vast mortuary refrigerator with its seemingly endless array of body trays. Lining the other side of the area was a series of doors leading to private examination rooms. They steered towards one of the rooms and opened the door. Jack was immediately hit by the strong chemical stench of phenol and formaldehyde, the unmistakable scent of a morgue. Inside the room were two figures. Dr. Lee, a small older woman sitting behind a desk, her fingers typing away on a keyboard. And Dr. Seeger, a balding figure with deep lines etched onto his face, standing at the other end of the room, rinsing his hands in a basin. In the center of the room was the examination table, a stainless steel slab bathed in the bright light of an overhead lamp. On it laid a body covered up to his neck with a white sheet, the corpse's face visible. It was Nick, serene and chillingly still. Jack involuntarily swallowed, a lump forming in his throat. While his profession used to expose him to multiple dangerous situations in the past, face-to-face encounters with death weren't commonplace for him. Undeterred by the display, Lay walked toward the corpse without hesitation.
"Dr. Lee, what are your findings?"
Dr. Lee rose from the desk to greet him.
"Officer Jung, always a pleasure," she greeted with a respectful nod. "And this must be Mr. Decker, am I correct?" she asked in broken English.
Jack shook her hand.
"You are correct, Dr. Lee, and please, there's no need to accommodate me with English. I've spent a substantial number of years in China. Mandarin will suit me just fine."
"As you wish."
"What do we have, Dr. Lee?" Lay inquired again.
"Nicholas Mahoney, 62-year-old Caucasian male. Immediate cause of death was exsanguination secondary to an abdominal incision."
"He bled out after someone cut open his stomach?" Lay asked.
"That is correct."
"The bathroom appeared undisturbed. How could Nick just bleed out? Why didn't he put up a fight?" Jack wondered.
"Mr. Mahoney's remaining blood contained alcohol and trace amounts of flunitrazepam and propofol. We assume Mr. Mahoney voluntarily entered the bathtub, where he was unknowingly drugged with flunitrazepam, knocking him out. The propofol was administered as the full anesthetic at this point, making him unresponsive to the incision and the resulting blood loss. The thing is, while flunitrazepam can be added to a drink, propofol needs to be run through a central line or a peripheral intravenous administration. So we looked for and found a small puncture on his right arm. Whoever did this had some form of medical training. He knew what he was doing," concluded Dr. Lee.
Jack gave an inquiring look to Dr. Seeger, who had joined the trio at the examination table. Dr. Seeger responded with an acknowledging nod, indicating that he agreed with Dr. Lee's finding.
"Officer Jung, there is something else," Dr. Lee continued.
"What?"
"Both of Mr. Mahoney's kidneys show anomalies. They are shrunken in size and display granular renal cortices, both clear signs of advanced diabetic nephropathy. Mr. Mahoney seemed to have suffered from late-stage chronic kidney disease."
"How is that relevant to Mr. Mahoney's murder?"
"It is relevant because we believe the reason for performing the incision into Mr. Mahoney's lower abdomen was to extract his kidney."
"You just said both his kidneys are there."
"His diseased ones, yes, but we are talking about his third kidney," Dr. Lee elaborated.
"His third kidney?"
"Yes, see the scar here? Approximately 7 centimeters long, right next to the incision?"
Dr. Lee asked while removing the sheet from Nick's corpse and pointing to the lower left side of his stomach.
This is a transplant scar from where a new kidney was attached to the vein, artery, and bladder while leaving the original kidneys intact. Routine procedure to treat imminent kidney failure. As expected, we found cleanly severed blood vessels at the incision site, which led to the massive blood loss and, ultimately, Mr. Mahoney's death.
Perplexed, Lee asked, "Someone killed him to retrieve a transplanted kidney?"
"It appears so," Dr. Lee confirmed.
"Dr. Seeger, what are the typical symptoms when one's kidneys are failing?"
Jack asked on a hunch.
"There's quite a range, including discoloration of the urine, edemas due to fluid buildup, persistent lack of appetite, and constant fatigue. Why?"
Nick's presumed burnout, Jack thought.
"Dr. Seeger, one more question. How old do you reckon the scar is?"
"It's hard to judge, but going by the coloration and texture, I'd say the kidney transplant was performed approximately 2 to 3 years ago."